Sing, you heavens, and be joyful, you earth. Break out in song, you mountains, because Jehovah has comforted his people, and he is compassionate toward his suffering ones. Isaiah 49 and 13. Break out into song. The Ward Green translation of Isaiah 49 and 13 from 2003, that translation is, and that was our daily scripture for today. Little children, we now return to our study of the Ark of Urartu. And I note here that I made some kind of a typographical error, it appears here, at the very beginning of this paragraph for the date 2738, which in the book by Jackson, which I have here in front of us also, if we look back on page 233 of that book, there we see, he dates Nimrod, in fact, in the year 2638, before the Christian era, as he calls it, which we call BCE, before the Common Era. 2638 is 100 years different from the date I give here, 2738, which therefore appears to be a typographical error. And I will amend that later when I amend all the other things. But it's not a critical error, as you will see, because we will look at this again in this paragraph, chapter 5 of Ark of Urartu, paragraph 7, in today's study, when we cover the same material that Mr. Jackson covers on the very next page of his book, which was written in 1752 and entitled Chronological Antiquities by John Jackson. This is volume 1, page 234. If you note that there, right? And also at the bottom of that page in the footnote, he mentions 2747 as the date in the BCE era for Nimrod. Okay? 2747, he calls, however, more than a century too early or too high as a number. It's too high of a number in his opinion. But in our chronology, 2747 is perfect. So he gives a way of dating that according to the writing of Philo, Herennius Philo, who he says, if we look it up here, Philo adds that Belus built Babylon 2,000 years before the time of Semiramis. Belus we've identified as Nimrod, right, earlier. 2,000 years before the time of Semiramis. And Semiramis was dated by Herodotus as 166 years before Nitocris, queen of Nebuchadnezzar, as he says. 166 years prior to that. And because of that, because of the number given by Herodotus, we're going to just calculate something. We know when Nebuchadnezzar ruled, right? Let's say he ruled, I don't know, 580, add 166, what do we get? Yeah, 746. Okay, that's very close. 747. And then 747 would be, that's about the time of Nabonassar, who was a king. I'm trying to think what city Nabonassar was the king of, or where he ruled, and it's not really important because it's the date we're interested in. But 747 plus 2000 is 2747, and that's how we arrive at that. But that's how Mr. Jackson arrived at the same date as we have for Nimrod, in the same century anyway. And he did his work in the year 1752, which is a long time ago, right? That's 272 years ago. Yeah, it's a long time ago. So Mr. Jackson, to begin reading our paragraph for today, as I slip relentlessly in my chair downward, Mr. Jackson dates Nimrod as, or at, 2738 BCE on the test, 2638 actually, BCE. But it's true that he dates him 27 something on the testimonies of Herennius Philo of Byblus, translator of the Phoenician history of Sanchuniathon, and on the basis of Herodotus of Bodrum, Turkey. Herennius dated Nimrod 2,000 years, as we just said, before the later Semiramis, queen of Nabonassar, from Jackson, page 277, footnote. How is that page 277? Let's check page 277. We already found the information on page 234. What does it say on page 277? I think that's another typo. That's what I think. But things are not always what you think. In fact, they're very often not what you think. That's why we have to verify all these things. That's why I wanted to verify what I wrote here, because I have to know that it's true. It doesn't ring true always on first glance, and if it doesn't, then you have to. So there it is, Semiramis, he mentions again here. Right, so Semiramis is mentioned on that page, right, and then he mentions 166 years again, that she lived before the queen of Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, there it is, 2738. Wait. He does date. Babylon was built by Nimrod about the year before Christ, 2738, which is 100 years higher, he says, than he had placed it, which we just saw, 2638. Wait a minute. But then he also says, by another reading of Philo, it was built 2538. So there's a lot of discussion about when exactly Nimrod lived. So the year I gave there, 2738, he does date it that way, according to Philo, of course. Interesting. So he does actually mention that 2738. There it is, in footnote on page 277. So I don't necessarily have to change it, but I might want to add a footnote here to explain a little further what Jackson really dated, or how he dated these things. In another place, he uses the same reasoning for 2747, which we mentioned in the footnote on page, in Jackson's page 234. Another look at Mr. Jackson's book, page 233, shows the rule of Nimrod is 6 years. So that was great that we checked that out, page 277. But 233, 194, it's hard to precisely locate in these PDF books sometimes. we see on page 233 that he gives Nimrod a rule of 6 years. Right there. After the dispersion, 6 years. Right? Because there was no such thing as a king prior to the dispersion, because they didn't need a king. They were all happily working together. There was no king, you know, until after the Tower of Babel failed, right? That's when kingship began. That's the understanding. Just a minute here. Okay, hang on a second. My zipper, sometimes I don't get it properly engaged, and it comes apart at the bottom. Okay, so our understanding is quite a phenomenally interesting and profound understanding that kingship of the world didn't begin until after the Tower of Babel. Okay, this was only something... Well, Mr. Jackson understood this. I'm not the only one, but as far as the modern historians, I seem to have been the only one who noticed this. Or it's very, very esoteric knowledge. It's very secret, sacred knowledge. Nobody knows it, but the Bible doesn't even talk about it. It's so strange. It talks about Nimrod began, or he made the start in becoming a mighty one in the earth. So maybe that's what that refers to. Maybe it refers to the kingship. He was the first king. I didn't think of that till now. In all the studies, I never thought of that in all the study I've done. Just because the Bible didn't mention the word king when it said that Nimrod made the start of being a mighty one, it never occurred to me that that's what it was talking about. But the 6 years of his kingship could have been after many years when he was actually the leader of the people, or a part of that group, and the one in charge, let's say, without being a king. But then after him, there was a king called Evbecuus. Remarkably, he could be the one also that we think of at times as Nimrod, because he ruled 7.5 years, according to Mr. Jackson. And he ruled immediately after Nimrod. So he was like the successor, possibly the son of Nimrod. But he reigned a very short reign. Okay, I want to get into this study because it's really interesting, I believe, to some people, certainly. I mean, you can't please everybody. What was I thinking the other day? There's so many things. There's so many things that... the idea of conventional wisdom. That's right, being wrong. The idea of conventional wisdom being wrong, right? Well, when we say that conventional wisdom is wrong, I mean, it typically, there are lots of things that are wrong. So how much of conventional wisdom is wrong? That's a good question, I think. Because it could be a very high percentage that's wrong. And yet there are, I think there are lots of things about or within conventional wisdom that are quite correct. A lot of things about it are quite correct. Maybe some of the methodologies or the ways of... What was it we used to be told? I'm trying to think. The idea that there are lots of these sayings that we have from English history, like there are more than one way... There is more than one way to skin a cat. That's one saying. But, even if it's not a saying, things that we learned from our parents, that they learned from their parents, and or that they learned from conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is, you know, it includes a lot of good common sense things. Because without conventional wisdom, sometimes we become ritualistic, where we always have to do things in a certain precise order, in a certain way, right? And we don't have any wisdom on how to just get the job done, you know? Because we're afraid of being wandering away off the path, right, of truth. But the thing is, I want to talk about this some more, but there's another element. When you allow yourself to adopt the conventional wisdom, or any wisdom from a certain school, but in this case we're calling it conventional wisdom, that just the general prevailing wisdom. So like the idea, okay. Well, there's many ideas, like the idea that, oh, women should be equal to men. That's a conventional wisdom, right? And obviously it's false, because we're not equal gender-wise. The genders are opposite, so it's not equal at all, right? So, and there's, even though there are many ways in which women are superior to men and vice versa, they're not equal. So it's a... But that's just one example. A ton of examples exist like that. I could go on and on. So, but the one I wanted to mention was the idea of when someone starts taking part in a certain activity, the one that's the most clear or I think definitive is when someone uses drugs. Because when someone uses drugs, and when they don't have any more a clear boundary between what is food and what is not food, let's say, you know, they don't have a clear boundary because they started using drugs, and drugs are not food. They're a poison or an unnatural chemical of some kind that's being used for the purpose of causing something in the body, right? But it's not a natural process, or it's not a healthy process. It's not got to do with health. It's something to do with eliminating symptoms or something. But as soon as somebody, or in the case of recreational drugs, it's got to do with creating some kind of a mood, or much more than that, whatever it is. But once someone starts using drugs, they can no longer understand the viewpoint that says you can't use drugs, it's not right, shouldn't do it. They can never understand why, because they've started doing it. And it's like Pete Rose, although I don't profess that I understand Pete Rose and what he did, but he allegedly and self-admittedly gambled on baseball. He bet on baseball, right? And he admitted to it, and then once that happened, he can no longer be in the Hall of Fame, because... And I was thinking about that. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I thought about it today. I didn't really understand. I hadn't really tried to understand, but I had not been given much information, so that's why, probably. But Pete Rose said he never bet against the team he played on. That was one thing he said, right? So, or he always bet to win, for his team to win. If he's playing in a game when he's betting on the same game, though, this was the problem, I think, that they were talking about. You can't bet on a game in which you're playing. And the reason why is because it gives you a different advantage over the other players, or it's like using drugs in a sense, but it's a different thing entirely, obviously. But he's betting on, let's say he bets on his own team to win, and he's playing in the game. Well, it goes, the reason why it's wrong in the case of that situation is it goes against the spirit of the sport, right? The spirit of sport is you play to win, and it's not a money-making thing if you, you know, you're not betting on it. You know, there's no, you're playing just for the sheer pleasure of it. Now, these players get a salary, so they've already been corrupted by that. But the spirit of sport is that you play just for the win or lose, just for the opportunity to win and beat the other team. That's the spirit of sport. That's the idea of sport, is to play for the victory, and that's all you play for. So if he's betting on it, he's not in a sport anymore. He's in some kind of a gambling arena in his mind. it's a different thing. So they didn't like that, and that's an understatement about how they felt about it. But they won't allow Pete Rose to get into the Hall of Fame. That's how strongly they feel about it. So that's how important that is. But it's in a way similar to the use of drugs in the body. But the problem with the use of drugs in the body is similar in many ways. Once you get the drugs in the body, the problem is how you get them out, because they're not natural. They don't get processed in a natural way. So they have to get taken out by some mechanism like the liver or some... The body has to get rid of these things. But there's far more to it than that, because it also affects the way you think about things. Not even considering how it alters the brain, which it also does, because everything affects the brain, which is a very sensitive organ. But not considering even the physical part of it, it spiritually affects the brain, because it gives you a different way of looking at, you know, you don't think of your body as sacred anymore. If you take drugs, you're seeing your body as some kind of instrument or machine that you can put input into. Or even if you use drugs in what you consider spiritual ways, you're not considering the health of the organism as part of the holiness of the organism. If the substance you're using is not nutritional or healthy. And so it gets into understanding health is what the key is to all of this. And very few people know anything about health. That's the problem about the healthcare system and doctors. They only have these wrong ideas. All of the ideas about how health works, they're all wrong, because that stuff is not wisdom. Because it's all, it can be if it's done correctly, except that virtually everybody does it wrong because it's so complex. Okay, so health is a complex thing, just like, I guess, well, way more complex, I would think, than sport. You know, I mean, the idea of sport is a simple idea, but I mean, sport is complex. Don't get me wrong. It's just that health is astronomically, infinitely complex. Because everything, every molecule in the body is affecting your health. It's that kind of situation. And there's billions, billions and billions, trillions of, and more than trillions of molecules. They say there's even billions and billions of cells, even just nerve cells, I think, in the body. I mean, it's just crazy, huh? And those are cells that contain, each of them contains a lot of molecules. Like, it's just a large problem. If you mess around with it, it becomes a bigger problem. So you don't want to ever do anything to your body without deep respect for life, you know, and reverence for life. We better continue before we run out of time, because so we date the Tower of Babel 2751 to 2745 from that 6-year rule of Nimrod that began 531 years after the deluge, which in our chronology is 3282, which minus 531 is 2751. This spans the birth of Peleg, who was born, let's say, 2749, which it is in our chronology. So that's pretty good, close to the 2747 that Mr. Jackson said. The remarkable agreement of the general date is confirmed that the rule of Nimrod in its beginning preceded Egypt, is evidenced in the history of the ancient religious systems. The book Nineveh and Its Remains, Volume 2 by Austin Henry Layard, Notes of the Early Assyrian Religion, page 439. Of the great antiquity of this primitive worship, there is an abundant evidence, and that it originated amongst the inhabitants of the Assyrian plains. We have the united testimony of sacred and profane history. It obtained the epithet of perfect and was believed to be the most ancient religious system. having preceded that of the Egyptians. On the Babylonian cylinders and monuments, the sun and moon constantly occur, and often seven stars arranged more in the manner of the Pleiades than of the Great Bear, and probably the latter. Zodiacal signs are frequently placed in the area along with the sun, moon, and seven stars, and show unequivocally that the Greeks derived their notions and arrangements of the zodiac from the Chaldees. The identity of Nimrod with the constellation Orion is not to be rejected. That's from Nineveh and Its Remains in two volumes, Volume 2 by Austin Henry Layard, 1854. Pages 439 and 440 with the footnote on page 440, but also there's a quote from the same book on page 482, which I'm about to read now. He says, "I shall be well satisfied, and my literary labors, as well as those of a more active nature, will be amply rewarded if I have succeeded in an attempt to add a page to the history of mankind by restoring a part of the lost annals of Assyria." That's Austin Henry Layard, 1854. Okay. And that concludes our study of the article for today. I wanted to just comment a little bit perhaps on this, because the Assyrian plains, he's talking about Shinar, where the Tower of Babel was begun to be erected. It failed, right? The Tower of Babel, the construction of it failed because the people were scattered, and the Bible documents that also. Now, you know, we haven't found a lot of other ancient records about that. Not many that are as ancient as the Bible, certainly, in terms of describing the construction of the Tower of Babel. So we would possibly be hopeful maybe we will discover more records of that. There could be more. But here, Mr. Layard is considering himself very well satisfied if he can restore part of the lost annals of Assyria, because that's the place, geographically speaking, where the Tower of Babel was constructed or begun to be constructed. So, you know, and we can consider it as the land of Shinar or the land of Assyria, whatever. The identity of Nimrod. Oh, wait, that's what I wanted to mention. Yeah, Nimrod is identified with the constellation Orion, which is phenomenal because Orion is called the Great Hunter. The constellation is called the Great Hunter, and the Bible calls Nimrod the Great Hunter, or the Mighty, a Mighty One, right? A Great Hunter. So Nimrod fits that identification with the Great Hunter in the constellation Orion. But also, you know, and that's also somebody that was the Egyptians called Osiris also. And he was their first king, they considered Osiris the very first king. Now, we know Nimrod was, of course, a king not in the country of Egypt, but maybe later he was, perhaps because of the Nekin Narmer palette, which was found in that city, Nekin, in Egypt, that could actually be identifying Nimrod himself, but was found in the city in Egypt. But the beginning of Egypt occurred in the land of Shinar. This is one of the most, you know, difficult things, I guess, because it's the earliest part of the history, the very first part of Egyptian history. There's nothing came before it. So you can't find, it's not part of a continuous body of records, right? It occurred first, and then Egypt began. So it's rather difficult to prove, more so than if it were just one datum, point in a protracted history. It's not that way. It's not just one element or one data point or record in a long stream of records. The occurrence of the beginning of the rulership in the land of Shinar was the very first thing that happened in the history of the Egyptian story, let's call it, I guess, where Osiris was their first king, and he relates to Nimrod as Orion, the constellation, as well. But the Egyptian history does appear to have begun with Nimrod himself, or with this, whoever we call Nimrod, Osiris, or Orion, the great hunter, on the plains of Shinar. Right? The Bible calls him Nimrod. And we can date that in our chronology to about 2751 to 2745. You see, that's why we got, that's the rule. If that's the rule of Nimrod, is that how we got the dispersion in 2745? Because it depends whether the dispersion occurred 6 years after the confusion of the languages, too. There's a lot of things that we don't exactly have the precise dates for, right? To be specific, the Tower of Babel and the details surrounding it. We'd like to know more, and we get these ancient fragmentary records, right, from ancient historians, which are really, really useful and valuable. But yeah, I mean, we later on in our later articles we call 2745 the dispersion, right? But maybe the confusion of languages started 6 years before that. I think there's another way of calculating these things, and we get 2751, I think, or 2752 by another method of calculating. We'll see that later, for the beginning of Nimrod's rule, which fits perfectly with this. And it could work really well for the confusion of languages. Forget the 43 years at that, adding that to that, though. But it's October 27th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 2146 hours. North American Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you so much for listening and watching. Once again, I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie saying bye for now. And we've been studying the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. That was Chapter 5, Paragraph 7. I went over time yesterday. I'm trying to get back on time again with our standard 33 minutes and 33 seconds, commemorating the favorite number of my late wife.